Hello, and welcome to Frankly Speaking. During today's program, we'll discuss how to publish the great American novel and lesser works. I'm Joan Ziemba for George Mason University. Getting your short story or novel published is highly competitive, and thousands of manuscripts shuttle back and forth in the mails daily. There seems to be only room at the top for a select few. Is there room for you? Today, to discuss their experiences in getting published and to give advice, are novelists Richard Bausch and Stephen Goodwin. Both teach in the writing program at George Mason University, and both have published two novels in addition to numerous short stories. Dick, your first novel, Real Presence, was an alternate Book of the Month Club selection and is coming out in paperback this fall. Your second novel, Take Me Back, has received some outstanding reviews. What can you tell a serious writer about getting started?
Well, the first thing is to write a lot all the time and to have enough persistence, I guess, to continue to send what you write out to magazines. And there are a number of publications that give you lists of such magazines, small magazines in the pushcart catalog and general interest in larger magazines, and quite a few little magazines are listed in Writer's Market.
Writer's Market is a book.
Yes, it comes out every year, and I would advise somebody who was using it, being his own agent, so to speak, to probably, you'd have to get a new one every 3 years or so, because there is a lot of movement among editors and people who do the choosing at magazines. And one of the important things to know in sending out stories is not to send it to a fiction editor or a poetry editor, but to have a name, somebody. Some specific person you're sending it to, you tend to get better responses. Well, you tend to get it read a little more that way. The first thing, it seems to me, though, is the writing. I mean, you have to be you have to write something that you're just convinced is so good nobody in his right mind can turn it down, and that's when you begin to send things out. And you just keep doing it. I mean, that's what I did anyway, and then eventually some people get interested. And so then you have, you know, a connection.
Let me jump in here and say that I think that these publications, although nobody can make a living from publishing short stories, not unless he happens to be able to sell the stories to a very few commercial magazines, but these little magazines are very important because they are read by people in the business. Anybody who publishes a good story in a small magazine will be read by editors in New York and will receive letters from them, asking not for more stories, but for a novel. It's almost impossible to break into print now, not completely impossible, but close to impossible, I'd say, to get a book of stories published before a novel is published.
Okay. Even after you have a novel published, I think it's difficult unless you have a few magazine publications. They just are not making money from them. In what Stephen is talking about, I published a story in Plowshares in December of 78, and a month after the story came out, I had two calls from two different agents asking if I had an agent. So they do pay attention to those magazines.
Stephen, you've published Kin by Harper and Row, Paradise, and Blood of Paradise by E.P. Dutton, also an alternate Book of the Month Club selection. How did you make your first contacts?
Well, I sold both books through an agent. It's very important to have an agent. Publishers now have a stack of unsolicited manuscripts, which they refer to as a slush pile. If you ever go into a publishing house in New York and look at this stack, you would believe that the description is apt. It is an enormous pile. It doesn't look like it's receiving a whole lot of attention. It's just sitting there languishing. It is important, I think, for any novelist who doesn't have some kind of connection to establish first a relationship with an agency. An agent's name on the cover of a manuscript is very important, and it brings it to the attention of a specific editor in a specific house. I was lucky. I happened to meet a few writers when I was still a student who put me onto an agent. And I think that that's a very typical pattern now.
Which underscores the importance of having of writing programs around the country, because that is finally where one can be sponsored. Your work is admired by another writer who has connections. I mean, you don't get into this business very far without developing quite a few connections, and those connections you pass them along to somebody you feel has talent and should be read. In my case, I used a fake sponsorship. I just put the name of a writer on a letter and said that he had suggested I send it to this magazine. But the editor, it was Esquire magazine, and fortunately that the editor liked the story enough not to question the sponsorship. And then he sponsored me. And that's how, I mean, I got my agent from Gordon Lish at Esquire magazine, sent a story of mine to Harriet Wasserman, who's my agent, and it all took off from there. But
do you need an agent to write short stories?
Some agents are very loyal to their writers. Others are not. An agent, when you have to remember this, is in the business. And it costs a lot to be in the business in New York. And stories are not, there's not a very high return. So some agents don't push them very hard. They send them to a few commercial magazines, and that's it.
Some agents won't even handle you if all you do is stories. Yeah. I would say, though, it is important to have an agent, but that in the first stages, one shouldn't concern oneself, particularly if one's writing short stories, about it too much. Because one of the biggest mistakes you can make is to pay an agent, to pay Scott Meredith or somebody like that to read. They ask for $100 for a short story manuscript, and that seems to me to be a horrible thing. And in other words, the pattern that is the best pattern is the old system of sponsorship and getting someone interested. If you have a novel manuscript, then you just start to send it to agents and ask, you know, there are people who can tell you the names of them. There are places where you can get the names of them. But again, in a writing program, you have any number of sources for that kind of information, names, where to send things.
By writing program, does that also include writing workshops, conferences?
Sure, sure. Those are more intense. And they're helpful. It depends on the writing conference. The one we gave last year, the emphasis was really on the manuscript itself, on how to improve one's writing. But there are things that happen in such conferences. I mean, I know of one instance where a friend of mine who's now at the University of Minnesota gave his name to an agent who wrote the name on the palm of his hand because he didn't have a piece of paper. But he'd heard him read, and he liked what he'd read. The whole scene, the writing program, the writing conference, writers coming in, residencies, and all of that, is the best way to go. I mean, there's a lot of writers out there and out in the cold, it seems to me, who just don't know this.
You don't. A lot of people, I think, are under the assumption that in order to have an agent, you pay them some kind of regular fee.
No.
Could you explain perhaps the simple version of the structure of the writer-agent relationship?
An agent takes 10%, sometimes now 15%. It's very simple.
And that's only of what they sell for you.
Of what they sell for you. And obviously they are not particularly interested in manuscripts that they don't expect to sell. 10% of nothing is nothing. it's a simple and very business-like relationship for many agents, although it should also be said that there are many who are extremely loyal to their writers, and I think that relationship is almost more important nowadays than the relationship with an editor. There are still a few editors who will stay in place. Writers are supposed to be such prima donnas, you know, but it's the agents and editors who are terrible prima donnas, it seems
That's
to
right.
me.
Yeah.
They're always changing jobs. If you can find an agent who really likes your work and who will remain loyal to you, you're in good shape, because it's likely that you will go, as I have done, from one publishing house to another, that you'll have different editors at some point along the line. There are very few cases like the famous old cases of Maxwell Perkins and his loyalty to Hemingway and Fitzgerald. There just aren't many editors like that. But an agent is likely to stay with you if you can find one who really does like your work and who will push it. That's terrifically important, I think, and is probably the one source of stability in a writer's connection to the whole publishing empire. I think it's important for writers not to worry a whole lot about that. There seems to be a notion that writing is somehow a glamorous profession. I don't think that it is, except for a few very lucky people. And they are lucky, and they're the first, they'd be the first to say it. I mean, witness the publicity that surrounds the John Irving's new book. Well, John Irving wrote three books that almost nobody knew about, and I think John would be the first to say himself that there are lots and lots of very good writers who deserved as much attention, but who are not ever going to get it given the nature of the book industry right now.
But are there any tricks, are any tricks of the trade that people can learn to get up front, to get published, to get through to editors?
Well, if that's what people want to do, no doubt they'll learn how to do it. I encourage people who are writing, the people who come to the writing various conferences and programs that we have here at George Mason, to look at it very differently. I think that it's best to spend your effort and intelligence figuring out how to write well and let the public part of it take care of itself. There was a magazine that unfortunately folded a few years back called American Review. The editor of it was a man who really championed writing and who used to say repeatedly in his introductions that this magazine attested to the abundance of good writing that exists now. And it did. He didn't publish the same list of people over and over again. I mean, every magazine, he had new people to publish. There's an awful lot of good writing. And I think much better for somebody to undertake writing as a career with that kind of fame in mind, that kind of glory, than to wish for, the money and the TV promotions and all the rest of it.
Well,
you're more likely
same.
To be satisfied, I think, and it's a more reasonable expectation to have.
The advice is not to take up writing for a living, but for a lifetime.
It's
not something, one of the first things you find out when you lose your innocence. I mean, when you begin with all these romantic ideas, and you feel like whoever the latest writer is you've read about, you feel like him. And you appropriate his future for yourself and all of that, but when you, you reach a point where you're sort of taking a jump across a river and you don't know whether you're going to come down on the other side, or you've made the commitment, you're going to write, you're going to do this, whatever else happens. And I think that's part of becoming a professional, is realizing that there is not a lot of money in it, B, it is not a glamorous activity, it's an extremely tedious activity, finally. I mean, you're not bored, but there's nothing more boring than watching a writer work. I mean, it's just terribly dull. There isn't anything at all going on except a hand moving across a page, fitfully. that it's just, it's very, very, very hard work. And if you're I think what Stephen is, or if I can extend what Stephen is saying, is that if you're thinking about the glory, then the work part of it is, I had a guy tell me one time, I want to write a bestseller so I can sleep late every morning. And I knew instantly that this guy was never going to write anything worth reading. There has to be some other reason.
Okay, thank you both very much. I'm afraid we're out of time. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Pat Ping. For information about our guests or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Joan Ziemba for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.